All right, 36 past the hour. Let's welcome in Scott Shanley. I think today is the day that I've hit the wall with draft nonsense. I just want the draft to be here with all of these wild takes and mock drafts going on.
Yeah, I think, you know, the more coverage we get, I think the more fatigue we get. And I think it's almost like, I view the draft almost like recruiting for college football. You know, you can get into it for so long, and then eventually, after you've been told the guy is really good and you've seen so many busts in your life, the older you get, the more you kind of just say, the heck with it. I'll judge it in about a year. But I think the excitement of who's going to trade who, what veterans are going to move teams, who's going to surprise somebody like Green Bay did last year drafting a quarterback high, that intrigue will always be there as far as draft night goes.
Hey, we talked last year during the off season, and we didn't know what kind of a season we were going to have, and we're inching closer to having a normal regular season in September. But before we get there, we've got to have, of course, the draft and voluntary workouts and OTAs and then to get into training camp. But the ability to do it remotely last year and how popular that was to keep guys safe, but also that guys came in and they still were pretty much prepared. Now we're going into the next phase. What were your thoughts on, and it's just voluntary right now, but we have what, Seattle, the Buccaneers, and Denver all got together as players, did something together, and said, nah, we're good on voluntary workouts. Do you expect more teams to follow their lead?
I do expect more teams to follow, unfortunately, and I hate it. And I think the union president, J.C. Treader and D. Murray Smith, should be ashamed of themselves that they're pressuring players. And I know it's voluntary. When I put my fingers up in the air and put quotes around it, because it's always been that way.
Yeah.
And players, there are certain guys who will work into their contracts, workout bonuses. And when I was in New Orleans, the majority of the team had workout bonuses. And it's a way of getting guys there at the facility. You know where guys are. And we had a good group of guys. It wasn't like we were worried about people getting in trouble outside our locker room. But that is a cause of concern for some teams. They like to have guys in the city they play in for the majority of the year. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And the workout bonuses aren't make or break money for a lot of guys, but it's working out with your teammates. It's working out with your strength coaches who are evaluating you, who are pushing you, who are putting together your weight programs. There is just such a benefit to doing that I'm worried that the union is using the COVID experience as the way forward. And I think you're going to see, from a fan's perspective, I think after a year or two or three of this, you are going to see a drop-off in the level of play in the game.
What, as a younger player, don't you want to be in that building? I get some of the older players, and they can afford the around-the-clock trainers and you know, facilities to be in. But if I'm a younger player, I want to be in that building, correct?
Absolutely. And I think you're going to see young players make teams over these middle-of-the-road veterans who, what's going to happen is there are going to be superstar players who, no matter what they skip, they're not going anywhere. They are cemented on the team. And then you're going to have guys who are good starters who think, well, I'm not going to show up if so-and-so doesn't show up. And you're going to have young players who show up at the facility every day working out. They're going to be around the coaches. They're going to sit in meetings and watch film and get a little extra time, and those young players are going to beat out these veteran players who aren't showing up. And I think it's an absolute advantage for the young guys.
What if I'm a coach, and I'm going to be installing a new offense or defense? What if I mean, even if I'm a new coach, but let's say I'm changing my scheme, I hate this, that I'm not going to get extra time around players so that they can get this new scheme, and especially going back to the younger guys that would be involved in it. I get it, but I don't understand how this is beneficial to the way the game is played.
It absolutely isn't. And the players have found a way to get some power back, get some leverage back, because I know we're looking forward, these collective bargaining agreements, you know, when you're talking to 2030, 10 years out, it seems like a long ways away. But what's going to happen is at that time, owners and coaches are going to come back to the table and say, we'll give you a little bit more revenue, but we need mandatory offseason. And so the players are using all these things as leverage in the next negotiation, and it's a long ways away. But, you know, under normal circumstances, new coaches in the past would always get to start OTA, offseason workouts, early, because it's expected that guys don't know what they're doing. You have to have more meeting time. You have to have more on-field walkthroughs. And so you're right. If you're a coach who just takes over a team and then that team official, their elected captains or part of the union say, you know, we're not showing up, I would absolutely hate it because you have such a hill to climb. Obviously, when you're a new coach and you're taking over a team, you're taking over that team for a reason. You weren't good the year before, so it's really going to set those teams back.
So when there's this time period when there's voluntary workouts going on, what does that encompass? Let's say you show up at the Saints facility. What's your day look like during the voluntary workouts?
Yeah, well, you're going to work out four days of the week, and it's going to be lifting and running, just like an off-season workout program. But like I said, your strength coach for your team is putting together your workout. He's monitoring you. He's evaluating you. If you have something that's sore or hurt, you just go from there. You go into the training room. So now your trainers are seeing you. You're not going to somebody else in different parts of the country. And then you'll do that for about a month. And then eventually you'll still be working out. Let's say you start in March. You'll go all the way through June with workouts. But in that time, you will have some days where it's organized team activities, which is football on the field, maybe twice a week, no pads. And then you'll get into your mini camps right before you get a break for the summer in June. And then you're usually off mid-June, all of July, and then you report to camp in early August.
Can you go as a player, as long as you're under contract with that team, can you go into the facility anytime you want?
Yes. Yes. I've never seen a guy locked out of a facility as long as you're under contract. And you know, you bringing up the contract part makes another good point that I should mention is, some of these guys, I don't think they understand that if they work out in the facility and they get injured, they have to cover your contract because you were working out in the facility. But if you go and you work out in your garage or you work out in Alaska, somewhere else, and you get injured, a lot of times the teams are not responsible for your contract after that.
So I saw a video last night, Colin Johnson, wide receiver of Jacksonville, and he's walking people on TikTok, Scott, through his day in an off-season of an NFL player, and he's got a very thorough workout, but it is, you know, he doesn't live in Jacksonville, but he's working out with someone else. How do strength and conditioning coaches in the NFL look at you using a private trainer before the season starts? Because his workout was pretty thorough. It did look like there were a couple of other NFL guys, I think he's in Southern California, that were working out with him. But if I'm the Jacksonville strength and conditioning coach, and I'm new myself, don't I want a little bit more control of a guy that's a good asset to us to work with him to get him in football shape?
No question, because you know these strength coaches of the NFL teams, they sit in all the personnel meetings.
Okay.
And the head coach goes around and he asks the running backs coach to evaluate the running backs, the offense coordinator to evaluate his position or his unit, and then the strength coach gets just as much talking time as anybody else. He talks about what guys are doing in the weight room, where they need to improve, weak upper body, strong lower body, he's tight in the hips. So the feedback from strength coaches to a head coach and a general manager is vital for guys a lot of times making teams. Or, you know, guys with the training staff, how healthy is he? Should we extend him 4 or 5 years? Will we get our money out of him? Is he healthy? So that feedback from the trainers and the strength coaches is vital for guys in their careers now. When you go pay a trainer, I believe that trainer has your best interest at heart. Some of these guys may get better workouts on their own. I'm not disputing that because, you know, a lot of times in the NFL, strength coaches are there to push you, to get your game, to keep you in shape, but not to hurt you. And the strength coaches absolutely do not want to hurt you. So a lot of times the programs in the NFL can be a little bit watered down. We're not squatting 800 pounds. We're not out there sprinting and timing 40s and doing all these things that you might do in college football. So a lot of times guys go use their individual trainer. You know, that can be an asset for some people.
How much football activity did you do during the off season? I know conditioning, but any other football stuff like what you could do out of your position?
No, not really. I think especially playing linebacker, you know, if you're a quarterback or receiver, you can get together wherever these guys go. You know, when we would be done in June, they would a lot of times go out to Drew's house in California and they would still throw the ball, run the routes, talk verbiage. But as a linebacker, your football is coming when you get to do organized team activities twice a week, mini camps, and then when you show up to training camp. And, you know, you can do drills. You're working on your footwork. You're working on your hips. You're working on different things. But it's hard to do anything at a lot of positions without everybody else around you.
How long is this Julian Edelman to the Hall of Fame talk going to last?
I don't know. And I don't think it's going to last very long because of the power of the internet. You have already seen in the past day if Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer, then why is this guy not a Hall of Famer?
Yep.
And there's a lot of people that you can stack right there that have better numbers than Julian. Julian played in an outstanding organization, played with the all-time great quarterback, played with an all-time great head coach. And I think at the end of the day, people are going to use that against him, and I don't believe he will be in the Hall of Fame.
So I will give you somebody. You know, everybody's doing comps, and you're right. They start bringing up respective players. Well, if he's not in the Hall of Fame, then Edelman is not in the Hall of Fame. I will use a guy that you know well, that if this guy's not in the Hall of Fame, there's no way that Edelman is getting the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Marcus Colston.
Yeah, and that's one of the comps that came to mind. And another Saint receiver was Joe Horn, who had better numbers than Julian in every single category, more Pro Bowls, all sorts of things. But Marcus was one of those guys. Our nickname for Marcus was Quiet Storm, because this guy was one of the most quiet football players you've ever seen, let alone a wide receiver, who those guys are usually talking. He went about his job every single day. One of the most respected teammates that I've ever seen. Guys just love playing with Marcus because you knew what you were going to get on Sundays. He, you know, you wouldn't see a celebration out of him. You wouldn't see him talking in the media about not getting the ball enough. The ball came his way. He was going to make a play, and that's just how Marcus went about his business. And I think, to the detriment of the way people looked at him, he wasn't brash enough. He didn't do all the T.O. and Ocho Cinco type things, and so people kind of overlooked him, but he was so productive as a receiver.
That is one of the best nicknames in sports history, the Quiet Storm. If you look, so you've played with Hall of Fame guys, guys that are going to be going in the Hall of Fame that you played with. What is your, in your opinion, be a teammate and a sports fan in this, and a media guy, all in one. What is your threshold for if a guy from the NFL is Hall of Fame worthy? What do they have to do in your mind?
Yeah, it's getting really tough anymore because, you know, it's hard to look at numbers. Really, it is, because the game has changed so much. When you look, we've talked about this before with quarterbacks just rewriting record books. Heck, Dan Marino and Montana and Aikman, all those guys would have liked to play with the rules they have now where they don't get hit. So, you know, Phillip Rivers is going to enter that discussion. His gaudy numbers, but where does he rank without a Super Bowl and never making a Super Bowl? To me, there's just guys who changed the game, mm-hmm. who you want to be compared to, who when you bring out a college guy and you say he's compared to fill in the blank, and everybody's eyes open up like, wow, that guy changed the game. He was a difference maker. And for me, the one thing I put a premium on in the Hall of Fame that I'm not sure a lot of people do is longevity. How long guys can do it, because in this game, you don't play healthy. You are banged up all the time. And for guys to play 15 years and not miss much time and have an Iron Man symbol right there next to their name and be very productive, I think that's worth a lot. I've said it before, Terrell Davis, outstanding player. I don't believe he should be in the Hall of Fame. He won some Super Bowls, had 2,000 yards rushing season, but I don't think he did it long enough. And I think longevity needs to be a big part of a Hall of Fame career.
I'm with you there. I'm glad we're on the same page about that. I absolutely agree about longevity, and at least we're seeing that with some of the candidates. But just a wide receiver, I mean, there's a backlog of really, really good wide receivers that still are not eligible or are still waiting to go into the Hall. It's okay. I think it's okay to say Edelman had a really good career, but there's a difference between a really good career and a great career. And, you know, I mean, you ask the guys that are in the Hall of Fame now, is that guy worthy of where you're at? I don't know. It's an interesting debate. We just rush to anoint guys when they retire nowadays. Are they Hall of Fame worthy or not? He had a really good career, and I think we should leave it at that.
No, and I think that's a great point. And I think the other thing I look at as a guy, is he Hall of Fame worthy, is could he have excelled in any era of the game?
Mm.
And when you talk about the backlog of wide receivers, you know, guys' numbers are just getting ridiculous because you can't touch them, you know, after 5 yards. You can't collision them. You can't do all these different things. You get called for holding when you're close to a receiver. So their numbers are just going to get more impressive. But I think at that position, would a guy been effective in any era he played in, I think is the best way to identify
him. That's a great benchmark. Scott, as always, I appreciate it. Have a good week.
All right, take care.
That's Scott Shanley. We always enjoy that conversation. I'm saving. We'll get to next week asking his thoughts on Kevin James playing Sean Payton in the Netflix special about Bounty Game. If Julian Edelman, again, Julian Edelman had a nice career. He had a good postseason career.
Really good.
He never made a, he was never first team all NFL. Mm-hmm. He's got an Super Bowl MVP. He's got 3 rings. He has 118 postseason receptions. He's got a great story to tell as a seventh-round pick who didn't have any Division I offers coming out of high school. If he didn't play for the Patriots, would there be now 3 days of this discussion? If he didn't play for the Patriots, if he played for somebody else, it's okay to say he was okay, not great. I mean, are we being fair to Julian Edelman? We do have this rush, and it's all of our sports, when somebody retires and they've been in the game for a while, adding to Scott's point, Edelman was in the league for 12 years, that we rush to anoint them and put them in the hall. Man, that's a special place. That is a special place of special men and women that have changed their respective sports. I agree with Chris. We should have a Hall of Good. And it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. If you're in the Hall of Good, but we push the Hall of Fame debate, and we push it on some players that were really good, but they weren't really great. And we can praise them and talk about how great their career was and how Edelman did this and he had the catch against Seattle. But that doesn't mean we have to enshrine them. Because, Patriot fan, who is more worthy of the Hall of Fame? Wes Welker or Julian Edelman?
Oh, I like that.
And then we could just say Edelman was he was the heart of the Patriots. Seventh round guy. Remember when the Patriots used to hit on those late round guys? They had a quarterback that was pretty good that was taken in a late round. Guys that were gritty, sneaky athletic was the way to describe the slot wide receivers. But I don't know, maybe it's because there's not a lot of stuff going on, but I'm just really surprised that this discussion locally, nationally, is now on to about 3 days. If you were the best at your position group, if you changed the sport, if you had an impact on the sport, either the sport adjusted because of you or you adjusted the position, that goes on your resume to get into the Hall of Fame. He was good. I mean, we brought up Marcus Colston, and, you know, Scott, as a teammate, I mean, Marcus Colston's numbers are pretty amazing. He's probably not going in the Hall of Fame. You know somebody else who has amazing numbers, not going in the Hall of Fame? More than likely, Sterling Sharp. Look at his numbers. I know, and it's also timing is everything about when you're up for enshrinement. Do guys fall off the ballot? Do guys, you forget about certain players? It is all about timing. I think there's some guys in Cooperstown that it was timing. When they were ready for the ballot, who was on the ballot with them? My number one thing, if I say somebody's name right away, you shouldn't have to pause if you think they're Hall of Fame or not.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I know the criteria to, the Nebraska, Omaha, and Creighton's Hall of Fame can be a little bit unknown, but any of those athletes at those respective programs, if I say a name to you, you shouldn't have to hesitate. Hall of Fame, yay or nay? Okay, Donald Driver, George?
Nay.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers?
Hall of Fame.
Yep. You shouldn't have to hesitate.
No. Donald Driver should be in the Green Bay Hall of Fame. That's different, though.
He is not on the Packer Ring of Fame?
I don't think so. I think somebody wore his number 80. Not yet. I think you will get there, though. Deserves it.
There's a lot of really good wide receivers that are sitting and waiting.
Yeah.
And remember, you got a guy in Arizona who we don't know if he's going to play this year or not. I mean, he's a first ballot guy.
First ballot.
And Larry Fitzgerald. All right, 11:55. The mailbag is coming up next for your opportunity to win a gift card from Oscar's Pizza and Wings. Our good friend Mike over at Miracle Hill. Good, which is great. He was good. Which is great. It's okay to say somebody is good.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we, as a collective group here, what do we consider the greatest wide receiver of all time?
Jerry Rice.
That's your standard.
Yep.
Hmm? Josh says, not even close. He's not. And I don't think we're doing him a favor.
I don't think so either.
And I know he's not, you know, Edelman's not driving this, but people that I think have pretty good opinions on the NFL are talking about this. Stop. If he wasn't playing for, if he wasn't a Patriot, would you be doing the same thing?
All right.
Mailbag's next.